It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and the new crisis our world is facing is reviving an old idea, the Victory Garden. Victory gardens first emerged during World War I. In World War II, Americans were once again urged to plant gardens to provide food for their families and neighbors. And just in the past week, we've seen a spike in orders for seeds and planting supplies, a huge number of Google searches for how to build a raised bed. This hour, we're going to learn about greenhouse production, and we'll get some advice for new gardeners, and we'll also, of course, answer your questions. Before we jump into that, I do want to mention that Iowa Public Radio has made the decision to cancel our spring membership drive. Now, logistically, we can't do it because all of us are practicing social distancing. We are never in the same room together if we can help it. But also because, of course, we feel that the essential public service that we provide at a time like this needs to continue with as little interruption as possible. Our costs continue to rise, in fact, because of the way that we need to deal with our new reality. So if you count on Iowa Public Radio, we do ask that you make a contribution. You can do that at iowapublicradio.org. And it is Hort Friday, so as a bonus, everyone who gives today will receive an Iowa State University Extension 2020 planting guide and calendar, beautiful pictures of butterflies, full of gardening information. You can give at iowapublicradio.org, or you can call 800-235-2665. Now with me today, Chris Curry, an associate professor of horticulture at Iowa State University. He also specializes in greenhouse production. Hello, Chris.
Hello, Charity. How are you today?
Good. Thank you so much for being here today. Also with us, Iowa State University Extension horticulture specialist Richard Giron. Hello, Richard.
Good morning.
Thank you both for being here today. And Chris, this is a busy time of year for greenhouse production, gearing up for the spring planting season. What kinds of things are going on this time of year?
Well, actually for the greenhouse industry, this is the biggest time of the year. It's a fair estimation to say that I would say you could get up to 60 to 80% of greenhouse business is going to happen in these next 6 weeks. Although we grow a lot of poinsettias to make the winter better and brighter, really the greenhouse community is primarily supported by the spring gardening season. Wow. And so this, we are in the thick of our season. While the soy and corn farmers have later in the season, this is our busiest time of year.
And we've talked on this program in the last few weeks about people starting seeds at home, but give me an idea of what that looks like in a commercial greenhouse, because, you know, a lot of us have our one or two little boxes full of soil, but in a commercial greenhouse, how do you do it?
Well, it really starts last fall is when it all begins, because when you think about a greenhouse, it gets to be very specialized. You know, although at home people are starting seeds in styrofoam cups and little paper cups under fluorescent lights, the greenhouse business really thrives on this specialization, and it's pretty interesting. If you back up and you look at those flowering plants or those tomato transplants that are purchased, you know, let's say around Mother's Day, end of April through May, somewhere around there, you back up. Those are grown in a greenhouse. It's very common for those plants to be grown from either seedling plants that are grown at a specialist propagator or by rooted stem tip cuttings, which are also grown at a specialist propagator. So these are people that specialize in growing very small seedlings or young rooted cuttings. They get their seeds and their cuttings from farms around the world. It's not uncommon for someone who roots stem tip cuttings to receive packages from Ethiopia, Israel, Central America, and that's where all these stock plants or the mother plants are grown, where the cuttings are harvested. Similarly, seed is also grown in other countries as well. And again, the orders for seed and the orders for cutting, those are being placed last fall. So then these places that produce the F1 hybrid seeds or produce those cuttings can ramp up production to make sure that they have sufficient amounts of seed and sufficient amount of cuttings ready to send to the specialist propagators, who then grow them and send them to the greenhouses where they're transplanted and what we call finished for consumers to purchase.
So, of course, back in the fall, none of the greenhouse operators could have had any idea that there might be a spike in demand this spring, although that spike in demand also might be tempered by people not wanting to get out to shop or stores being closed as well. So it'll be interesting to see how it works out. But let's talk about the environment of a greenhouse, because you have created an environment that you can control entirely. A lot of us, when we start those seeds at home, we try to control the environment, but you know, you have to get the light right, you have to get the temperature right. How do you do that in a greenhouse?
Well, it starts out, and let's just look at, we'll start with seeds, and then we can talk about cuttings a little bit. When you sow a seed in a greenhouse, in order to get the maximum germination, and really that's what we're concerned about, because we're trying to maximize the number of seeds that turn into saleable and transplantable seedlings that turn into transplantable flowering or vegetable bedding plants. You want to try and turn every seed into a plant. And so when you talk about germination rates of, you know, if half your seeds germinate at home, you might be happy. But for a commercial grower, that would be horrible, meeting 50% losses. So in order to maximize that germination rate, we have these specialized germination chambers. And it's really like a sauna, not quite as warm as a sauna, but it's a chamber in which the trays that have the soilless substrate, made of peat moss usually, and the seeds are in there, and then these trays are placed inside the germination chambers. Usually the humidity is maintained at just around 95% or so. It's maintained between 95 and almost 100%, because we need that seed to imbibe or to take up water, and that's going to be what starts all those processes inside the seed that result in germination. So they're placed inside of these warm germination chambers that are kept, you know, between, depending on the species, you'll have different chambers. You'll have a chamber that's kept maybe at 68 degrees Fahrenheit, one at 75 degrees Fahrenheit, and maybe one in the 80s, because different species will germinate at these different temperatures. You've got the humidity being maintained, and then some species will need light to germinate, whilst others will need complete darkness. So we've got these specialized germination chambers. Once those seeds germinate, then the trays are removed, and the growers of these plugs are watching these seedlings every day, waiting for them to germinate. And then after that, they're removed from the germination chamber, and that's when they're brought into a greenhouse, and they start to be grown more like a regular plant, if you will, where they're grown under the sunlight, or maybe we've got some electrical lights providing supplemental light. We start to fertilize, and we start to grow on the true leaves and develop the root system to make that seedling. And it's really similar with a rooted cutting. When you get a rooted cutting, it's, again, going to be a stem tip cutting off of a stock plant. And you're going to take that cutting, and they're usually going to be treated with some sort of a rooting hormone that's going to promote root development. And we stick these cuttings in the tray. And then for the first week or so, they're in a very humid environment, because without roots, they don't have a way to take up water. And we want to maintain the turgidity of that cutting so we have a more humid environment. Then, at the base of the cutting, as the roots start to develop, you can start to lower the humidity, start to provide more nutrients, start to provide more light, and start to, again, grow it on more like a regular plant. And then usually between 4 to 6 weeks, we've got a young seedling plant or a young rooted cutting that's ready to be transplanted into a container and grown on again to flowering or finished.
So that explains why these plants that we buy at nurseries look so strong and look so good, because they've been growing in these ideal conditions. But also, Richard is always giving us advice on how to harden off these plants and help them make the transition outside. And what you've told me, Chris, really underlines the need for that, because they're really not growing in the same environment that they will be growing outside.
Yeah, and what happens, and so I was pretty lucky. We've got a number of really talented specialist propagators that grow seedling plugs and grow these rooted cuttings and actually supply the country. So we've got some pretty great growers in Iowa. When they're sold then, and there's these young plants are sent to other greenhouses, those greenhouses that are growing them to get them ready for sale, they are trying to tone, what we call tone or harden, that plant. So at the end of, say, if we're growing a 4-inch tomato pot. The grower is starting to dry it down a little bit, give it brighter light levels, give it cooler temperatures. That hardening process starts when growers are trying to produce these plants, because they know that the success of the consumer is going to affect next year's consumers. And so our greenhouses are doing everything they can to try and set consumers up for success. So they're not just taking these plants out of a sunny 72 degrees greenhouse. They're trying to condition them and get them ready for a retail environment and getting them ready for the consumer's house as well. But now, then, yes, we should still do some of that, some more hardening at home, because the better you can tone or harden your plants, the better garden performance you'll have.
So we are in very strange times, as I mentioned. I mean, we've seen an uptick in people buying seeds and looking for information about gardening. What are greenhouse growers experiencing right now?
Well, like I said, this is the height of our greenhouse season. You know, we're entering the period where the majority of business is going to be conducted. And, you know, one thing I'd like to say is supporting greenhouses are supporting your local businesses. So many of our greenhouses, whether it's a retail garden center or the wholesale grower who's producing the plants for these larger box stores or grocery chains, they are your local businesses. They dot the landscape of Iowa, and they're really getting ready to provide plants to people, because that's what we do. These are uncertain times, and it's unfortunate to see what's happening with so many small businesses suffering under the current conditions. But I know we're all doing it to take care of each other and to produce a safe environment. What's happening with greenhouses is they're actually being deemed essential businesses, and we can see this in other states where these shelter-in-place orders have come. Greenhouses are actually doing fairly well and providing a lot of opportunities for gardeners.
And I'm sure people will get very creative on how to buy plants without being in too close a proximity to people. I'm sure we'll see a lot of innovation in the next few weeks. We are going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. With me, Chris Curry, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. We'll hear more from Richard Geron, ISU Extension Horticulture Specialist, in a moment. And of course, we want to hear from you. Give us a call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and we'd love to hear from you with your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me today, Chris Curry, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. We've been talking about greenhouse production, and Chris can, of course, answer questions about that. But we were going to talk about orchids today. That's one of his passions. So if you have orchids and you have any questions, Chris would love to answer questions about that as well. Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist Richard Geron is also here. And Richard, I read a wonderful article in the New York Times about this victory garden movement that seems to be re-emerging. And just briefly, if somebody was going to plant a garden for the very first time this year because they want to have some fruits and vegetables at home, what would you recommend for a starter garden?
I would say tomatoes. Very easy, very productive. Summer squash. Again, very easy, very productive. Green beans, cucumbers, those are some of the easiest things and very productive.
All right. So if you're planting for the first time, you might want to keep your ambition in check, would you say?
Be realistic. You may run into some problems. So start small and see how it goes.
The article that I was reading talked about how as the victory garden movement reemerged in World War II, there were a lot of first-time gardeners who did it one year and then abandoned it because they didn't realize it was going to be so hard. Now, of course, we have a lot more social support for gardeners now and a lot more information out there than we used to. People can find the information they need, and of course, they can call Horticulture Day. But Richard, you have so many resources available online at Iowa State University. Is that a good place for new gardeners to start?
Absolutely. We have a number of publications they can download, they can print off and read 24 hours a day. So, yes, good place.
All right. So if you're a new gardener, if you're an experienced gardener, we want to hear from you. 866-780-9100 is the number to call with your questions. And first up, we've got Carol on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Carol.
Hi.
Hi. What's your question?
For 2 years, I have bought peonies in a box from Lowe's or Home Depot when they mark them down to 90% off, threatening to plant them in the fall. I haven't done that, so I've got a year-old box and a two-year-old box of Sarah Bernhardt peony eyes, I'll just call them. Should I just throw them away, or shall I plant them?
Sorry, Richard, go for it.
So they were purchased last year.
Last year and the year before.
Yeah,
I have two boxes.
Right. They don't survive long-term out of the soil. And so I would assume at this point that they have dried out and died, unfortunately.
Okay. That's too bad. Thank you.
Yep. Thanks a lot for your call, Carol. A lot of us have great intentions when we're at the garden center, and follow through can be hard at times. Ron is on the line next in Iowa City. Hi, Ron.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
Well, we had a patio garden with about a dozen 5-gallon buckets that we did a few years back, like 2-3 years ago, and haven't done anything with it for the last couple of years. And I'm wondering about getting tomatoes and green peppers. My wife thinks we have to change out the soil. I'm thinking dirt's dirt, and we can add some kind of fertilizer package. What do we do?
It would be best, I think, if you actually removed some of that, at least some of that, because in a container, typically you fill that with a commercial potting mix, and over time it begins to break down, and so the characteristics aren't quite as good. So I would remove at least some of that and put in some fresh commercial potting soil.
All right, so dirt is not just dirt.
Right. Typically when you have a container, you really don't want to use garden soil and fill that with soil, because it doesn't really work very well in a container. It tends to compact, it tends to crack, and the growing conditions just aren't very good. So you typically want to use a commercial potting mix where you have good drainage, it doesn't crack, you have good aeration. That is much better than actual soil.
Well, and I have to say, Ron, for you, I'm not a great gardener, but for many years I had to grow my tomatoes in containers, and now I grow them in the soil, and I had better tomatoes when I grew them in containers. That's a nice controlled environment that you can have outside. So if you put the right soil in there, you're probably going to have success. Let's get a couple email questions here. This one's for you, Chris. This is from Jefferson in Des Moines. I'm a new orchid owner, and I was given it in a gift box. The plant is in charcoal, and I soak it in water that I have let come to room temperature for 15 seconds. What else do I have to do?
Well, first of all, congratulations on being a new orchid owner. That's always a great thing. And, you know, you actually you don't necessarily even need to have your water come to room temperature. If you've ever heard of that, add an ice cube to water your orchid, I'm assuming you have what we call a Phalaenopsis orchid or a moth orchid. You can actually just set a couple of ice cubes on the surface of that growing substrate and let it melt. Now, you can also do exactly what you're doing and continue to do that, you know, get some tap water and water with that. I would encourage you, though, to get some fertilizer. And this is something that you can order online or safely go down to a local garden center and pick some up. And you want to be able to provide some fertilizer to that orchid because they do still need mineral nutrients while they're growing in that container. And not fertilizing houseplants in general, and specifically orchids, is probably one of the most common mistakes that I think a lot of home growers make. They say plants make their own food with photosynthesis, but that's really just sugars. They still need mineral nutrients to grow.
So tell me about charcoal as a substrate for an orchid plant. That seems unusual.
Oh, it is unusual. I've seen orchids grown in shredded tires. I've seen orchids grown in shredded socks. I've never seen an orchid grown in charcoal. I've seen them grown in bark. the substrate that you actually grow, what we might think of the soil and where the roots are, is a little bit different with orchids, because many of these plants are epiphytes out in nature, meaning they're sitting up on the branch of the tree and their roots aren't in what we think of as soil. So really, you can use a number of different things as long as it's not toxic to an orchid plant, and it's just meant to hold some moisture and keep the humidity up around those roots. So I could see why charcoal could work. Traditionally, orchids are going to be grown in a mix of very coarse bark with some perlite, that little white kind of rock stuff. And then there's also usually charcoal in some of that mix, or they're grown in long-grained, unmilled sphagnum moss.
All right. Let's get back to some questions, some other questions. You can send your questions to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. You can also call us 866-780-9100. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Chris Curry, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University, is here with me, along with Richard Geron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. And here's a question from Bruce. He says, I'm just wondering if it's too early to apply grass seed and start fertilizer with weed control. I have an area of about 300 square feet to do. It's in the parking lot, the area between the street and the sidewalk. The city removed a large tree stump and all the associated roots last November, so I was unable to begin with the grass seed and fertilizer at that time because it was too late in the season.
As far as a timing-wise on that, I would say around mid-April. And what I would do is go to my garden center and find a specific product that they can put on that is a starter lawn fertilizer plus a specific pre-emergent that prevents the germination of crabgrass seed and other weed seed, but allows the grass seed to actually germinate. Because when you sow grass seed in the spring, typically the biggest problem is we get a lot of weed seed germination. And they germinate very quickly, and they grow very quickly, so that it tends to crowd out the grass. So use that special product, and then keep it wet, and it should come up.
All right. I think this is a time of year where a lot of us get really antsy to do stuff that we really should wait to do. Is that something we should all take under advisement? It's still very early?
It's still very early. We have a few warm days and a few cold days, and for the grass seed to germinate, it needs a consistently warm soil temperature.
All right, here's a question from Julia. Are goji berries a good choice to grow in Linn County? I like the taste of these berries. I can only get them dried. My garden catalog has carried them for years. Is there any horticultural reason why I shouldn't plant them in my corner of Iowa? Again, she's in Linn County. What do you think?
I would try those. We haven't done any trials on those, but they're hardy, and so we should be able to grow them.
All right, let's go to the phones, 866-780-9100. Bruce is on the line in West Des Moines. Hi, Bruce.
Hey, hello.
Hi, what's your question?
Yeah, so I'm growing super hot peppers this year, and I'm just wondering if you have a recommendation for a good fertilizer to use on them.
Once in the garden?
Once in the garden, or right now I have them as seedlings as well, so maybe a recommendation for now and then when they're in the garden?
What I'd probably use is kind of an all-purpose garden fertilizer outdoors, like a 10-10-10, and I would just apply that in the spring before you plant. And as far as indoors, I'd probably just use a water-soluble fertilizer.
Okay. Any NPK ratio on that one?
I would look for something that's fairly balanced, like a 1-1-1 ratio. So outdoors, maybe 10-10-10, maybe indoors, 20-20-20. And when you water periodically, as far as indoors, periodically add a little bit of fertilizer to it.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number. Julie is on the line in Decorah with an orchid question. Hi, Julie.
Hi, thank you so much.
Yeah.
I've been wondering about this. I have two orchids, an Oncidium gaueri, which I think is the moth orchid, I'm not sure. But anyway, it has six shriveled elliptical structures at its base. They still have some leaves coming off of them, but they don't look very healthy. And then on the top, it has one of these elliptical structures that seems to be producing healthy leaves and a long stem of some kind. So I've been giving it regular nutrition beyond what, you know, just water. And it also has air roots growing from most of these little structures. I don't know what to do with them. I don't know if they're old ones that need to be taken off or if they need to be left on the plant. And then my second question is about a Phalaenopsis, which has the long, very dark green leaves. And it seems to me that I have two new plants coming out of the base of this one. So I don't know if I should keep the old leaves on there and take them off or what. So anyway, aging orchids, what do you do?
Sure. Well, let's start with the Oncidium. Those shriveled things that you're describing are the old pseudobulbs. And what I would do, when is the last time you repotted that plant?
Oh, dear. I have never repotted it. I've had it for probably 3 years.
Okay. Well, then, I think we got a simple solution. I would try and go get some orchid potting mix. I don't want it to sound like I was recommending shredded tires and,
and socks.
Shredded socks before. So I would just stick with a regular orchid potting mix. But go ahead and get some orchid potting mix. I tend to prefer the bark-based instead of just the long-grain sphagnum moss. I think it's more free-draining and won't break down as much. So get some new orchid media.
Yeah, they are in bark now. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Okay.
So take it out of the container and then sort of use your fingers to tease out all the old substrate and wash off the root system. Now, look at the roots that are connected to those old pseudobulbs. If those roots are old and stringy and think stuff is sloughing off, then you can definitely remove some of those older pseudobulbs. And then and then go ahead and just repot it in that fresh media. And you can take those aerial roots and you can tuck it down into that media. Because one of the reasons that it might be growing aerial roots is that your old substrate has broken down and they need more air. Like I said earlier, they're an epiphyte. And so they're growing aerial roots because they need more oxygen, and that old substrate might be getting compressed and not as much oxygen down there. So I would go ahead and repot those. I don't think you need to prune off any of the roots or anything like that. I'd just start with repotting.
And then now those pseudo bulbs, do they stay on the plant then?
Yes, they can stay on the plant. I normally take pseudo bulbs off. You don't want to just remove all of them because there might be some stored energy in there. So that's why I tend to remove usually no more than a third of the old pseudo bulbs, and I look at the condition of the roots to guide how much I take off. If they're still healthy roots, you can leave them on there because they might sometimes they'll sprout from the base. But if the roots are bad, you can go up and you can go ahead and remove about a third of those old pseudo bulbs. But you don't want to remove them all. That'd be too much of a shock for the healthy growth that's left.
And the roots, do they go down into the pot then?
Yep.
I mean,
yep. You can go ahead and
tuck
them down in there. And with that fresh media, they'll have enough air down in there where they should be pretty happy.
Okay. And what about the Phalaenopsis?
Okay. So you said you have a couple of plants growing out of the side. When you look at the oldest, the mature plant.
It looks like they're new, like they're,
When you look at the old one and you look down on top, is the middle of it still producing new leaves? Or is the middle of it dead?
The whole thing is still green, but I'm trying to look at it now to see how it looks like it's all still alive.
Okay, then what I would do is just let them grow and let them continue to grow. Phalaenopsis orchids are very different than the Oncidium that you have. They don't produce pseudobulbs, and they also generally don't grow these extra growths. They're what's called monopodial, or they grow in one line. But they do occasionally have these side shoots like you've described. I would let it continue to grow. And then with some of that leftover orchid media that you've purchased to repot your Oncidium, let those side shoots get a little bit bigger. And then when you're feeling adventurous, you can try and divide them off once they've got roots of their own. You can grow a couple of plants, and then you can give them away to friends, and we can get some more orchid growers.
Wow, that sounds like a great idea. So thank you very much. And do you have a special book that you recommend on orchids?
Oh my goodness! A special book? I've got a shelf of special books. No, but I think for introductory orchid growing, there are quite a number of serviceable books that would do a great job. So wait until your local bookstore opens up, and then you can head on down there, and just about any intro book would work.
All right. Thank you so much for your call, Julie. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back with more Horticulture Day in just a moment on Talk of Iowa. With me, Chris Curry, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University, and Richard Duran, ISU Extension Horticulture Specialist. Also, remember that everyone who donates to IPR today will receive an ISU Extension 2020 Planting Guide. Please invest in your public radio station, iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and we'd love to hear your questions. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. I also want to mention that this time of year is normally a time of year when we do fundraising on Iowa Public Radio, and we have canceled our spring membership drive because of the extraordinary times that we're living in, and also the role that Iowa Public Radio brings in bringing you essential information. I hope that you're enjoying this little bit of normalcy with Horticulture Day as you turn to Iowa Public Radio, not just for news, but also for great conversations, for music, for the other things that bring you joy and pleasure in your life. If you value Iowa Public Radio, we do ask that you make an investment. iowapublicradio.org is our website. You can also give us a call at 800-235-2665. And everybody who gives today on Friday, because it's Horticulture Friday, will receive an Iowa State University Extension 2020 Planting Guide and calendar. It showcases beautiful butterflies and is chock-a-block with planting tips, harvesting recommendations, all kinds of information that you need for growing your garden. iowapublicradio.org or 800-235-2665. With me today, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist Richard Duran and Chris Curry, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. We talked earlier in the hour about greenhouse production, but Chris is also passionate and incredibly knowledgeable about orchids. So if you have orchid questions, give us a call, 866-780-9100. And next up, we've got Chuck on the line in Tama. Hi, Chuck.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
I've got my tomato plants in my backyard in the same spot for about 15 years. I add cow manure every couple of years, and I'm wondering if I'm wearing the soil out in that area, but I really don't have another place to plant them.
No, you should be okay. If you're periodically adding either fertilizer or manure, that's perfectly fine. Now, in the future, if you add manure, I would work that in the fall so that there should be no problem as far as food safety issues the next year.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Chuck. 866-780-9100. Arnie's up next in Waterloo with a potato question. Hi, Arnie.
Yeah, hello.
Hi, what's your question?
A few years back, I had my first garden, and I planted potatoes, like 14 potato plants.
Uh-huh.
And the white Russian potatoes. But when I harvest them, they only had one potato. In each and every one of them, I got 14 potatoes, but one potato was big enough to feed a family of five, weighed 4 or 5 pounds. Have you ever heard of anything like that?
No, I haven't. Typically, if you have a favorable site and you give them good care, they'll produce several tubers, not just one, but several.
One. Every plant just had one. The land was owned by the railroad. They had to park boxcars down there, and they told anybody in the city they could plant their garden there. I don't know if they had a dump or what.
Well, that's odd, Arnie. I think Richard, Arnie should probably try it again. What do you think?
Oh, I would try it again, sure. But I think in most cases they're going to end up with 4 to 5 tubers and nothing terribly large, but who knows?
All right. Well, Arnie, let us know how it turns out. 866-780-9100. Here's a question from Mike in Milo. Of course, you can also email us at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Mike says, I followed your past instruction and planted milkweed seeds in moist soil and placed trays in the refrigerator on March 10th. When do I take them out of the fridge, and are there any other special instructions?
I would leave them in the refrigerator for about probably 3 weeks, and then take them out, put them at room temperature, wait a couple weeks. If you don't see anything germinate, maybe put them back in the refrigerator for another week or two and then bring them out. But they should probably germinate after that cold period. The cold period basically encourages germination. They should do it on their own, but that cold period is helpful.
All right. Another orchid question up next. Gail is on the line in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Gail.
Hi. Good morning. I have an orchid plant that was given to me as a gift, and I've had it sitting by the kitchen window, and I've been, you know, watering it occasionally, and I'm using plant food mist. And I have lots of beautiful green, but I have no stalks and no flowers. And this is probably, it's been a while, over a year. Am I doing something wrong, or is there something else I should do?
Okay, when you say you have an orchid, do you think it might be a Phalaenopsis orchid? Does it kind of have big, floppy green leaves that are pretty thick?
Yes.
Okay, that sounds like a Phalaenopsis. Then I would venture to say that you have very high-quality windows. What happens is that Phalaenopsis need cooler temperatures in order to flower. So I would try and find one of the draftiest spots in your house that's going to get a little bit cooler, and it's that cool temperature that's going to promote the flowering. And I'm not saying a cold temperature, you know, like our perennials outside, but in the mid-60s is going to be cool enough to induce it to flower. It's when you have warm temperatures that can inhibit the flowering of those plants.
Okay, because it does get sun in the, you know, the latter part of the day.
It's an air temperature thing. And
well, but it would produce heat though. It would make it warmer.
Yeah. So
okay.
Try and put it somewhere a little drafty, and hopefully you'll be rewarded with some flowers in a few months.
Should I continue to use the plant food mist?
If it works, go for it. You can just mix it up in the water and irrigate or water it normally. You don't have to do that misting. In fact, they take up more nutrients from their roots than they do their leaves. So you can just fertilize it with water when you're just watering it. But if you have fun misting it and it's something to do while you're socially distancing, then continue to do it.
Okay. Well, thanks. I'll try to move it around.
Yeah, Gail, thanks a lot for your call. Another orchid question next. Mary in Windsor Heights. Hi, Mary.
Hi. You might have already answered this too, but I have a orchid that's blooming now. It's something I haven't really did before, and I just wondered when the bloom dies off, what do I need to do to in between time to have it bloom again, and how much do I water it, and the soil, everything's pretty dry on it right now. I mean, the roots are okay, but I think so. I just want to know if it will rebloom and how do I get it to rebloom. I mean, it's.
Sure thing. Well, I'm betting it's a Phalaenopsis orchid because that's the most popular orchid that's grown and given as a gift plant. So it's like what I said with the previous caller, you want to let it cool down. And when I say cool, like in the 60s, put it by a drafty door, a drafty window, something like that. That'll induce flowering. Since it's still flowering, though, continue to enjoy those flowers. When those flowers die, you can do one of two things. You can cut the flower stalk off at the base where it comes out of the plant. Alternatively, what you can do is just leave the flower stalk there, and if you can stand the slightly untidy look, let the flower stalk start to turn brown. Because what happens is often the entire flower stalk won't die. So what you do is you let any part of it that's going to die, die, and then you can prune that off. But if you leave the rest of that flower stalk there and it stays green, it'll actually form additional spikes or even grow baby plants from that flower stock. And so I've got some Phalaenopsis that I haven't pruned the branches on for several years, and then when they come into flower, it's just like an octopus of flowers with all the branches. So that's something you can do. As for watering, I think you can do one of two things. You can use the ice cube trick. That's pretty easy, where you put a couple of ice cubes on the base of the growing media and let them melt. Or what I do is I tend to take them over to the sink and I do a double watering, meaning I water them thoroughly until water's coming out the back or at the bottom of the pot. I walk away, come back in 10 minutes, water it again thoroughly till water's coming out of the bottom of the pot, and usually once a week that's sufficient. And it's really all about keeping the moisture at the root zone. You don't have to miss the foliage or anything like that. The plants will take the water up from the roots.
And then how will it bloom again? Like, will it be just another year before? I mean, will it take that long? Or
it'll be again? Until you can get those cool temperatures again. So depending on how you run your air conditioning in the summer, that's going to affect when it's going to get exposed to those temperatures below 70 degrees that'll promote flowering. If they've got the right conditions, they can bloom all year round. It's those lower temperatures. You know, I think technically it's below 73, but I like to say just below 70. Depending on when it gets those temperatures, that'll induce flowering.
All right, Mary, thank you so much for your call. Next, let's go to Bob in Carlisle. Hi, Bob.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
Yes, I have a question regarding fertilizer for wisterias. I planted two amethyst balls of wisterias last year. And what type of fertilizer should I put on them? So that they can do well this year.
With wisteria, the actual vine type plant?
Yes, vine wisteria, and then amethyst balls is a variety.
I wouldn't do a thing, actually. We tend to have very good soils here in Iowa as far as fertility, and those are very vigorous plants. So I don't think you have to fertilize at all, really. If you want to, you could probably take maybe a handful of like 10, 10, 10, and sprinkle that around the plant, but I don't really think it's necessary. They're a very vigorous plant.
Well, I appreciate your help.
Yep, thanks a lot for your call, Bob. Next, let's go to Carl in Oskaloosa. Hi, Carl.
A couple of months ago, you recommended pruning maple trees in early summer. Does that hold true for lindens, ash, and sweet gum also?
Right. For the most part, we like to prune most of our shade trees in late winter, early spring, except for oaks, which we do in the wintertime. But as far as the other trees, we can prune those. Nearly all the other trees we can prune in the summer, like July, is fine, because at that point they're fully leafed out. We typically don't want to prune trees in the spring as they're actually leafing out, and in the fall as they're dropping their leaves. So early in the spring and midsummer is great.
Thank you.
Yep, thanks a lot for your call, Carl. Next, we will go to Pat in Moline. Hi, Pat.
Hi.
What's your question, Pat?
Okay, I have a problem with weeds in my brick patio and sidewalk. And my neighbors have a yard that's composed of Creeping Charlie, which always comes under my wood fence into my garden. I've been using Roundup, which always makes me feel guilty, but it's almost impossible to control these weeds any other way. Is there something else I can do?
Well, if it's creeping into the garden, typically you can pull it out or dig it up. It doesn't have a very deep root system. It's very shallow rooted. As far as the cracks in the sidewalk or other areas like that, you could use a putty knife, an old putty knife, and just basically remove it that way. That's a lot of work, but it definitely can be done. I've done it on occasion.
All right. So it's a good exercise. Get you outdoors, right?
Yes, and do it after a rain, where the soil is moist, so you can get them out of that crack very easily.
All right, let's go to David in Des Moines next. Hi, David.
Hi. Quick question. Is it still a good time to cut my crazy spirea back to the ground or near the ground?
You definitely can. You can do that this weekend or next week. Should be perfectly fine.
All right, David, thanks for your call. Sue is up next in Winterset. Another orchid question. Hi, Sue.
Hi. I have a Phalaenopsis, and it's blooming. It's got 7 blooms and 3 more buds coming. But I'm wondering about the roots, because the roots are coming up and over the pot. Should I repot that and go with a bigger pot or not?
Well, it's up to you. So the reason why your Phalaenopsis roots are coming up and over the pot might be a little bit different than the caller earlier in the program. Phalaenopsis roots are really, really unique in the sense that they actually have chlorophyll in the root. The root is surrounded by this thick, spongy material called velamen. There won't be a quiz later. And in that velamen, there's chlorophyll that wants to photosynthesize. And so the roots are coming up just to get light so they can photosynthesize. So you can do one of two things. First, you can just enjoy the exotic appearance of roots growing in the air and not be worried about it. Or two, if you'd prefer that they stay in the pot and have a neater appearance, you can repot it, but I would suggest using a clear plastic pot so you can get sunlight into that root zone, and that'll help keep them in the pot. And research has been done on this. The clear pots, the roots stay in the pot, whereas when you have something that blocks light, they'll come out of the pot.
All right, Sue, thanks a lot for your call. And we've got a couple email questions we'll try to get to before we run out of time here. This one's from Kathy. I have a question about a maple tree, not sure of the variety planted approximately 3.5 years ago. It was a bald tree planted in November when we built a new home. It's in dense clay soil. It's grown slower than any maple I've ever had. It is alive and showing some new growth now. I have 3 other maples planted 2 years later that are growing well. They were from containers. 2 other black gum tupelos are also doing well. Is there a way to feed this tree to encourage growth?
You could sprinkle some fertilizer around the tree, but I think it's mainly the clay issue. It's having a very difficult time growing in that very dense type soil. So I think that's the main problem. So you may not see much benefit from fertilization, but you can if you go out with like a 10-10-10 and just sprinkle that around the tree. That might help this spring.
All right, and here's our final question from Susan. I'm having some landscaping work done. There are naked lady lilies planted where they'll be working, so they'll need to be moved. I'm not sure at this time where I want to move them. Could I put them in pots and have them bloom in pots this year and transplant them later in the fall?
You could try that, where you dig them up and put them in a large pot, let them do their thing, and then they'll die back. And then maybe later on this summer, you can put them back in the ground. That would be great.
All right. So worth giving a try for sure. Richard Giron, thank you so much for being here today.
You're welcome.
Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. Chris Curry, thank you.
Oh, you betcha. Thanks for having me.
Chris Curry, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. And of course, Iowa Public Radio is here for you, keeping you connected to the world, because our members have been there for us in the past. We're not doing a membership drive this spring, but if you value what you hear on Iowa Public Radio, please make an investment. Give at iowapublicradio.org or call 800-235-2665. And everyone who makes a donation to IPR today will receive the ISU Extension 2020 Planning Guide and Calendar.